Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show, a real estate investment program. Listen and learn how to use real estate to build wealth and passive income streams for you and your family. We bring you experts every day to discuss and answer your questions on everything from single-family homes all the way up to 600-plus unit apartment complexes. And now, the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome to the show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, I'm working on your financial freedom. As a matter of fact, I'm going to work on Dennis's financial freedom right now, because Dennis gave me a call yesterday and he said, "Hey man, I'm a new member, Lifestyles Unlimited, met you at the case study that we had in San Antonio a couple days ago, just wanted to say hi. And by the way, I'm just curious how real estate does in inflationary times." And to be more specific, his question was, how can real estate be a hedge against inflation? So that's what Dennis wants to know. So you know what, Dennis? I'm the guy with all the available time. I went out and I did some research for you. I did, because that's the kind of guy I am. And you're a fellow Lifestyles Unlimited member, so I'm going to do things for you to help you succeed. That's just our culture. That's the way we roll. So ironically, as I was doing my investigation into finding the answers that Dennis was looking for, I found that there's a lot of really bad information out there. Yeah, there's a lot of really terrible information as to what you should do should inflation happen to hit our shores in the United States. Oh, what's that? Mr. Producer, what's that? Oh, inflation's here? Really? Oh, it's coming in. 7%, you read. 9% in another source. Oh, okay. Got it. All right, so what my producer's telling me is that apparently I've missed the mark. Apparently, inflation has shown up, and it's kind of running around rampant right now. It is. Everything is more expensive. Have you noticed it? I know I've noticed it. I know that when I went to go buy some bacon for a recipe that I was going to make, I noticed that the cost of that bacon had gone up significantly over the previous year. Yeah, significantly. Oh, what does significantly mean? Well, significantly means that it's gone up enough that I noticed it. So what exactly would constitute significance for me for pork pricing? Well, I would say that maybe a 10 to 20% increase is pretty significant. But I'll tell you, my bacon, it's like 50% more than it was. No, I don't mean like the package size. No. I mean the price. The price is 50% higher than I paid for the same product, not necessarily the same pig. Let's be straight there. But the same product a year ago. That's what inflation is. Inflation is something that actually occurs in the markets. It does. It happens naturally. And we could get into like a PhD level discussion as to why that occurs, but I don't want to bore you. And I really don't need a PhD thing hanging on my wall, so I'm not going to go there. So let's suffice it to say this. Inflation is really the cost of your life getting more expensive. Yeah, I think that's the best way to analyze it. Now, for most people, inflation wouldn't be a big problem. It really wouldn't be much of a problem if their wages kept pace with what inflation's doing. So in other words, if inflation's gone up 7% or 9%, like the numbers that my producer threw out at me, and your wages went up 10%, well, essentially, you got a raise, right? So you're feeling good about yourself. Now, your purchasing power isn't much better, but you haven't lost any ground. In other words, because your wages are keeping up with what inflation is doing, your purchasing power is relatively unchanged, even though you're probably paying a little bit more in taxes. You are, because guess what? Taxes are a percentage of what you earn. It's not a fixed expense. It's a percentage, which kind of turns into a fixed expense if you really, okay, I don't want to do this math thing today. I told you I didn't want to do PhD stuff, right? So let's step away from that. So how is it that real estate outperforms all these other assets out there, and that real estate is the one asset class that everybody talks about when inflation hits. Well, it's because there's a lot of data out there. I mean, there's major research out there. You can go find it yourself. But the research that I'm looking at is suggesting that over the past 100 years, real estate has outproduced inflation. In other words, real estate values and the income streams produced by those real estate assets have done better than inflation has done. So what does that mean? Well, it means if you're one of those people, like I used to be, that's trading time for money, and your wages aren't keeping up with the fact that everything is going up in price, you're losing ground. You are losing ground. In other words, even though your paycheck is the same, that paycheck that you got last Friday is the same paycheck that you got, what, 2 weeks prior or 4 weeks prior or however you get paid, right? That dollar amount hasn't changed. But when you went to the gas station to fill up your car, you noticed that, wow, not only are there more people here trying to get fuel, but the prices are higher. And then you went into the supermarket because you're going to do your grocery shopping, and you realize that for that $200 that you were going to spend in the grocery store, you are not able to put as many products into your shopping basket. See, inflation is eroding your purchasing power. Inflation is devaluing your net worth. It's devaluing everything financially about you, and you can't do a darn thing about it. You can't do anything about it. So when inflation starts to hit the United States, like it started to hit the United States over the past year, people start taking notice. People start getting nervous because we haven't had inflation like this for like, what, 40 years? But guess what? Inflation's back, baby. And I'll tell you what, if you're not invested in real estate, there's still time. When we come back from the break, I'm going to tell you about this bad information I found because I don't want you doing any of this stuff. Stick around.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be a part of Lifestyles Unlimited? Del Walmsley tells you what to expect when you join us for the next live online free workshop.
We've been here for 30 years. Over 30 years, we've had and or do have roughly 50,000 plus members all over the United States. We have retired tens of thousands of people, and it's just incredible what you're going to find that you're going to be in here. Not only are you going to find the greatest amount of information and education, you're going to find the people, the most open people you've ever met in your entire life.
Come meet the people at Lifestyles Unlimited who will help you change your life and empower you to stop depending on a paycheck, your 401k, IRA, or Social Security for your future. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com. At the free workshop, we'll teach you the five ways to make money with real estate, cash flow, equity capture, appreciation, equity buildup, and the tax advantages. Like Dell says, we'll open our books and show you how the numbers work with both single family and multifamily case studies. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Now, let's get back to your map to financial freedom.
Welcome back to the show. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to beat up on inflation because inflation's beating up on us. It is. It's beating up on us. In Lifestyles Unlimited, we meet together physically. We share information through emails. We help each other out. If somebody has a question and then somebody has the answer, they'll post the answer that meets the needs of the question. Everything that is communicated within the confines of our knowledge base, which was created by Lifestyles Unlimited for us. The difference between, say, me and my current situation and me in a situation I used to be in, which was, let's just take me back to my Army days. Let's just take me back to being an Army officer, where I received pay and allowances in exchange for doing the duties of an Army officer. Okay? So every year, I had an opportunity to make a little bit more money. And you're wondering, what, does the Army pay bonuses? And the answer is, well, they actually do. But no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about making a bonus. I'm talking about one of three things that could occur that would allow me to make more money in the Army. Okay, you ready for them? Okay, the first one was if I got promoted. Yeah, a higher rank indicated I would bring more money home to my household. So that was one way for me to make more money. Another way for me to make more money was longevity. In other words, you're paid based on your rank and your number of years served in the military. The military actually believes that there is value for somebody that stays along longer, or stays around longer, I guess is the right way to say that. Okay, so that's the second way. The third way was something called a cola. Now, I'm not talking about RC. I'm not talking about Coke or Pepsi. I'm not talking about the generic brand. I'm talking about cost of living allowance, COLA, a cola. A cola that is issued by the United States government based on what it feels the economy is doing with regards to the costs of goods and services. So the government passes these COLAs along to different recipients that receive money from the government. Okay, so military members, we receive money from the government. That's our wages, right? So security recipients, they receive money from the government. That's their so-called what, retirement savings, right? Okay. And then there's a lot of other payments that are made to a lot of other people. And because the economic indicators have modified a little bit in the country, the government pays you a little bit more money. So going from 2021 to 2022, we saw the largest COLAs being paid out to government check recipients. I'm one of those. I'm being upfront with you. I get a check every month from the government. It's not Social Security. It's a retirement pension. Yeah, and I got, I think it was 6.9% this year. They increased my retirement pay by 6.9%. And ironically, inflation's even higher than that. So even though the government measured what they thought inflation was doing, and they drew their line in the sand, and they said, okay, if we give everybody 6.9%, they're going to be whole. Yeah, the government missed the mark, as usual, because inflation is higher. Jason told me 7%. Then he told me 9%. And then Daniel got on and said, hey, I've heard other numbers too. And at the end of the day, all of your hard-earned efforts to earn money for yourself and your family, as well as all of your hard-earned efforts to put money aside into retirement, all of those efforts are being beaten down by inflation. Beaten down by inflation. I was telling y'all about this COLA stuff, right? How many of you went to work in 2022 and your boss said, oh, we're so glad we're going to be opening back up. As a matter of fact, to celebrate, we're going to give everybody a 10% COLA. Probably didn't happen in corporate America, did it? No, it probably didn't happen. As a matter of fact, most of the guys that I know that are in corporate America right now, to be honest with you, they're all Lifestyles Unlimited members. They're all working on their personal exit strategies. I'm not going to give you any of their names because I don't want anybody to be found out by their employer, because I'm helping these people get themselves retired to get away from corporate America. Most of the guys that I know, they went into their raise meetings. I guess that's what they're called, right? You go into your annual meeting where you sit down with your boss and you talk about, okay, this is what you've done over the last year. You've been a great star performer, et cetera, et cetera. You've got potential to do my job and my boss's job. You know, they blow all that sunshine up your chimney, right? And you're just like, okay, get to the bottom line. Tell me how much more money I'm going to make this year. And then they come out and they go, oh, we're only allowed to like give bonuses here and there for the specific target people. And okay, so they're mumbling mouth around the fact that they're only going to give you a 2% raise. That's all you're worth, a 2% raise. And the economy is costing you more. So essentially, you're going negative. You're going negative. Yeah, you may have got an extra 2%. And maybe, I don't know, maybe you've got a $200,000 a year job. So 2% of $200,000 is kind of a big number. Of course, you got to take away all the taxes and the Social Security, Medicare, that kind of erodes that too. So maybe if you're making a couple $100,000 a year and you get a 2% raise, you're going to be okay when prices for everything else goes up 10%. But what if you don't make a couple $100,000 a year? What I'm getting at is that inflation really hurts mostly the people in the economic spectrum that are on the lower end of the spectrum, all the way from I don't have a job, I can't work, that kind of thing, all the way up to the uber super billionaires. Okay, that's the spectrum. If you have a household that makes, let's say, a combined income of, I don't know, throw a number out there, $75,000. Mom and dad work, their combined income that they bring home, $75,000. And inflation goes up 10%, meaning everything that that family consumes is now 10% more in price. Oh yeah, to include possibly their rent. You heard me correctly, possibly their rent. Now, here's a pretty interesting thing that most people don't think about. When rent prices go up, we don't just arbitrarily contact our residents and say, hey, inflation just went up 10%, therefore your rent's going up 10%. No, we don't do that. It's actually illegal. I guess it's not illegal to try and renegotiate your lease contract. I guess you could do that at any time. As a matter of fact, there's language in the lease contract that says that if both parties agree to a modification of the contract, then I guess that's okay. It's totally fine, right? But we don't do that. We don't do that until the lease contract ends. And then I don't automatically just raise my rents just because I can. I take into consideration a lot of things. All right. I was supposed to tell you about all these dumb things that somebody thinks you ought to be doing besides real estate. And I didn't tell you about them because they're dumb. But when we come back from the break, I might let you in on the bad news. Stick around.
Your challenge is that you don't believe you can be rich, is that you don't believe you can retire within 5 years. That's half of your challenge. And until you can come up with that belief system, until you can reconcile that in your mind, you won't be willing to take the steps necessary to get there. So you need to get in here and meet some people.
Join us for the next free workshop and meet the people at Lifestyles Unlimited that will share Del Walmsley's belief system and empower you to take the steps you need to be successful. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
Warning, listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show will change your life. We will teach you how to create wealth and passive income so you can be financially free. And now, back to your host.
Welcome back to the show. Sorry, it took me a moment to jump back on here with you because I was doing a little bit of extra research for you. I was getting into the experience of the individual that wrote this article that I'm looking at that was published on Investopedia. And what I don't want to do is I don't want to go out and just, you know, lambaste or abuse people. So I'd like to understand what their frame of reference is and why they write articles the way that they write them. And this article was written by a gentleman by the name of Mark Cusson. He wrote an article for Investopedia where he talks about the top five ways to hedge against inflation. Writes kind of an interesting article, and it's kind of long, and there's five things that he obviously targets. Okay, one of them's real estate, right? Okay, so let's save the best for last. Here's the four that he mentions that I just think are not really good ideas. When inflation's turning up, I just don't think these are smart ways for you to get ahead or stay ahead. So the first thing he suggests is this, is to reallocate money into stocks. And his premise is that your money is sitting in bonds. Bonds pay like nothing, especially with the interest rates where they're at right now. I think you almost have to pay the bondholder to have the bond. I mean, that's how bad they are. if you're invested into bonds and you've got a bunch of money sitting in bonds and you're not making any money on it, are you really investing? Or are you just shoving money into a mattress? If you're doing that, then actually this suggestion that Mark makes is actually a better suggestion, because what he's saying is that you could take about 10% of what you have in those bonds and reallocate those into stocks, into equities. Then he goes on to say this. He says a 60-40 stock to bond portfolio. Okay, so stop right there. He's assuming that all of your assets are 50-50 between stocks and bonds. That's where he's writing from, because he's saying if you shift 10% away from bonds into equities, in other words, into the stock market, now all of a sudden you go from a 50-50 blend to a 60-40 blend. And that is considered a safe, conservative mix of stocks and bonds. You know what that sounds like to me? A way to not make any money. An effective way to not make any money. Oh, you'll make some money, but you're probably not going to lose any money. Well, I don't know. You got 50%, maybe 60% in the stocks. Oh, wait a minute. He's got a warning here. Uh-oh. I got to share with you the warning. A 60-40 stock bond portfolio is an easy investment strategy and will help you hedge against inflation. But keep in mind, it will, okay, here it comes. Ready for the floor to drop out? It will underperform over the long term compared to an all-equity portfolio because of the effects of compounding interest. He just flat out said bonds are dumb. He said it. I didn't say it. All right. Then he goes on and he says, oh, if you're going to buy stocks, buy preferred stocks, because these stocks will give you a higher yield than most types of bonds. Okay, again, this is just a way for you to shove money into something so that you can say you've got money somewhere, and hopefully when you want to go get that money will be liquid enough for you that you could take it out. That's what that's all about. What's the next idea? Okay, let's go on to this one, because he's talking about diversifying. And you know what my thoughts on diversifying, right? Yeah, you can get yourself so diversified that you don't even know what you're invested in, because I used to be that guy. But he says, diversify internationally. That's right. Spread your money across the globe. So take your money and invest it somewhere offshore. Oh, wait a minute. What about all those articles I've been reading over the last month about, hey, are you invested in Russia? Hey, are you invested in states that like to invade other nations? Yeah. Okay. You've been reading all that stuff too, right? Okay. Here's the other thing. Why do you have to go offshore to invest your money? Why does offshore make your investment that much better? Just because it's in a global market? I really don't think it does. As a matter of fact, none of my investment money is offshore. $0 of my investment money is outside of the United States borders. You heard me correctly. All of my money is invested in America. This is my country. This is the country that I was born into from Russian immigrants, of all things. Yeah, on my father's side. They came from Russia. You want to talk about a conflicted guy? Here I am. Okay, so I'm investing in America because I think America is the best place on the planet to invest your money. This guy thinks that maybe you need to diversify offshore. And then he goes on to say this. He says, the percentage of international equities and bonds in the portfolios of U.S. investors is 21%, despite the fact that international markets represent 60% of global public capital markets. This phenomenon is known as home country bias. You bet your butt I am biased for America. Love it or leave it, this is America. You should be investing your hard-earned money here in this country. End of story. Okay, I know I just made a lot of you mad that have your money invested in China. Good luck with that. That's probably the next domino that might fall. All right, let's get back to what old Mark here is saying, because, okay, I got to skip over the real estate. He says, look to something called TIPS. Yeah, T-I-P-S, TIPS. Maybe he wants me to go be a waiter. What is it? No. He says TIPS are something called a Treasury Inflation Protected Security. I don't even know what that is. I've never heard of that. I don't know what that is. Well, okay, he explains it to me. He says, they're a type of U.S. Treasury bond. Oh, here we go. We're going back to bonds. Wait a minute. Hold on, Mark. Didn't you just suggest in the first paragraph
that we don't do bonds, that we start migrating away from bonds. But now you're suggesting that I migrate into bonds, but this very special kind of bond. Here's what I know about bonds. And I don't care if it's a special bond. I don't care if it's got a pretty name to it or not. Bonds are the worst producers of income and wealth, period. If you can disprove me, send me your evidence to askal@luinc.com. I will read your evidence on the air, and I will eat crow. I will eat crow. But I don't think I will eat crow, because I think bonds are terrible investments. I really do. Okay, so what else is Mark suggesting, since you don't like any of this stuff, Al? He says, buy bank loans. Yeah, go out and buy bank loans. Yeah, go ahead and compete with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mae on the secondary mortgage market. Okay, that's not really what he's suggesting. What he's suggesting is that there are businesses out there that actually can thrive, that actually do well in environments where inflationary pressures are present. And some of those businesses may have to take out financing. They use the financing as debt to help get their businesses up and running. We do the same thing with real estate. So what he is suggesting is that you just buy the debt. And there's a real big problem with that. When we come back from the break, I'll tell you what it is. And it has to do with equities.
Now more intel from the files of Del Wamsley.
Focus on commitment to the project, whatever the project in hand is, getting in shape. Commit yourself to getting in shape. Focus on the commitment. Don't focus on getting motivated. Forget the motivational step. You don't need it. Commit to the results. As we work through the rest of this stuff, you'll see that commitment to the results is what's going to get you there. Because number two, I think, is important tie-in with number one, is that is seek knowledge, not results. Now, what I found is that if you try to just get out there and do something, I told you this story 10, 20 times about me going out there and rebuilding this train layout three different times before I finally went to an expert, to a pro, and got all my questions answered, because I kept getting into it and running into something, a design flaw that was designed into the very plan. So you'd get to that design flaw, when you run up against it, you could go no further, you had to take it all apart and start over again. I did that two or three times. Finally, I realized what I need to do is I need to totally envision the entire project.
Stick around.
Everyone is asking, is it still a good time to invest in real estate?
We see no indication that for the foreseeable future, and even the unforeseeable future, no indication whatsoever that real estate is suddenly not going to be the best vehicle for creating wealth and passive income for your family. And so that would say that now is the time to get in. And we very rarely talk about this, because we talk about cash flow. But now we're talking a little bit about capital gains and what the future brings in that property. Because it's real. At the end of the day, you have all your cash flow, but you've got this nice capital gain when you sell. And the inflation that we see and the reasons for it are going to continue. And we're going to see great capital gains at the end of the line when we sell these properties.
Get in on the next free workshop. Register at lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com. Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. It's time to turn up the volume and fine-tune your passive income plan so you can create the lifestyle you've always wanted.
Welcome back to the show. All right, so we were talking about buying debt. That buying debt is a great way for you to protect against inflation. All right, well, let's break it down. Let's think this through. Is this a good investment for you? I don't think it is. And let me explain my position as to why. First of all, let me explain what Mark suggests you ought to do so that we can all at least get in the same room together. So he's saying you should go out and you should buy something called a senior secured bank loan. what a senior secured bank loan is, a debt instrument that is recorded against an asset in the first position, not in the second position or any other junior position. It is a note that is treated first and foremost if anything legal has to happen to remedy the condition of the asset. I think it's a bad way to go. And here's why. When you go out and you buy this debt, you're going to buy it at a discounted rate. That's how these debts get sold, okay? So they're going to give you a discount, so to speak, to allow you to take on the debt. That discount represents the amount of money you're effectively going to make in that asset, okay? Here's the other thing. You're buying the interest that comes in off of that debt. You're also receiving principal back. That debt is based on a fixed number. In other words, the person that took that debt out, they borrowed a certain amount of money. They've paid that loan down, and now the holder of that note wants to dispose of that note because they want money for something else. So they're going to sell that note to you. You're going to buy that note, and you're going to buy it based on the fact that that note's going to be paid for however long that note's going to be paid. And at the end of the day, eventually, whoever took out that loan is going to repay that loan, and you're going to be made whole. But here's the problem. There's actually two problems. The first problem is that you don't get any benefit of the equities of that business. You don't. All you did was you bought paper debt. And you know what that paper debt potentially is going to return to you over time based on the loan structure. But you're also buying the risk of that loan, and you're buying the risk of that business. And if you haven't done your homework to understand what that business is, why are you investing in the debt on a business you don't understand? Problem, isn't it? Here's the other problem. I just think it's a bad way to go, because I mentioned you're buying the debt position. You're not buying any of the equity position. So when this business flourishes, when this business grows, when this person or entity does what it's supposed to do and they pay off your loan, you're out. You've been made whole. You got all the money you were supposed to get, but you don't get any of that beautiful blossoming business because all you did was invest in debt. And this is why we invest in real estate. Because what we're doing is we're investing on the other side of the table. See, I'm going to bring in debt, because debt to me is nothing more than a financial vehicle. And there are people out there that get all concerned about paying points or paying interest or having the interest rate go up or the interest rate go down and how that affects everything. Okay. And you can machinate over that stuff and drive yourself bananas. You really can. I choose not to. See, I look at debt as nothing more than an entity coming alongside of me that understands my business plan, that's willing to loan me money. I didn't say invest with me. It is a loan, not an investment. There's all kinds of federal regulations on lending and stuff like that. You got to go check out that CFR code, man. Trust me, if you got sleeping problems, the first chapter of any CFR book will put you out. You don't even have to get past the first page. That's how bad they are. But there are volumes of them. It is heavily regulated. And here's the thing. When I go out and I buy an asset and I bring debt into that asset, that debt position participates only as debt position. So why does that matter? All right, well, let me go back to the house that I'm selling, the one that I told you about on yesterday's show. So we're selling this thing for, like, I don't know, $265,000, I think is the price point on this property. I'll be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure. I'm not sure if it's 267, 265, or 263. I'm not 100% sure. I don't really care. It's not that big of a deal to me. And here's why. When I bought that house, I paid $174,000 for that house. And I put 20% of my own money into that property. So what does that mean? Well, it means I didn't have enough money per se to pay all cash. So I had to bring a reputable lender alongside of me to loan me money so that I could obtain that asset. Now, trust me, that lender, well, they went up one side and down the other. They wanted to make sure they understood who they were getting into business with. And what they found out was they actually found somebody that knows what they're doing and more so has a very good business plan. A business plan that he learned from an organization called Lifestyles Unlimited. Go figure, right? Here's the thing. I borrowed not quite $140,000 on that property. I'm selling it for $265,000. So what do you think my equity position is in this property right now? Well, it's about $125,000, give or take. What I did was I took about $38,000 of my own money, and I bought that single-family house with it, what, 15, 16 months ago? Not 100% sure, to be honest with you, and doesn't really matter, does it? Because that house did exactly what it was supposed to do as an investment asset for myself and my family. It not only paid me great cash flow, I was getting, I don't know, about $450 a month positive cash flow. And when the resident decided they wanted to move out and they wanted to go move somewhere else, I said, fine, go ahead. We looked at putting another resident into the property. And we realized that we could actually get that cash flow up to about $650 a month, which would have been about a $2,400 a year raise to my family. Nothing to sneeze at. But the other thing that we noticed was that we had hit our price targets for considering a sale. For me, it was a $50,000 increase in equity. That's what was going to get me to look at selling the property. And when I had my realtor do the market analysis, she came back and said, nah, 225, can't do it. And I'm like, oh, we're not there. And she's like, no, it's at 235, bro. And I'm like, whoa, 235? She's like, 235. And I said, okay, well, let's dig into the comps. If we did an appraisal on this thing right now, what would we use for comps? We found two really good comps and I found two not so good comps. So we kind of said, all right, well, if it sells on a loan, then we could probably get the price of maybe 240, possibly 245. But that's the upper end. But here's the thing. I sold to a cash buyer. I sold to a cash buyer that had been trying for 6 months to buy a house and they kept missing out by $1,000 here and $1,000 there and $1,000 over there. So when they came and they found my house and they realized that that's the house we want to buy, they made me an offer that I couldn't walk away from. They offered me $265,000 for a house that, to be honest with you, I think I could get an appraisal for $245,000. But if somebody had offered me that property on a loan, I would have known we're not going to get the appraisal. But for a cash buyer, it doesn't matter. And more so, that cash purchase actually helps that entire neighborhood because now you have somebody that's willing to come in with cash and increase the values in that neighborhood. That entire neighborhood just got a bump in valuation. Are you following the bouncing ball now? Are you seeing what's going on? Because at the end of the day, Tina and I took less than $39,000. We put it into an asset. That asset paid us five different ways. And when it came time to transact that asset, which we are doing right now, as a matter of fact, we close escrow tomorrow. You heard me correctly. We close escrow tomorrow. I plan on having a check for well over $100,000 in my hand. What does that mean? Well, it means I took less than $40,000 and I turned it into over $100,000 in 16 months. Now, tell me how I could do it any of these other ways that Mark suggested. And this is why the one way that Mark actually suggested is the best way, period.
Del Wamsley on how to live the lifestyle.
You can see a lot of people that are going through their savings rapidly, especially during the pandemic when there was no work going on. People that work for short periods of time had a lot of problems because there was no jobs for them. The second problem they experienced, though, was that they don't have savings accounts because there's no savings plan set up. There's no 401k, there's no IRA. Again, you should have that on your own. Even without a 401k or IRA, you should have some type of investment plan. But the most important ones, I think, was the one before that, which is said people don't know how to invest. Even if you have a savings plan, and obviously if you put in a 401k and IRA, you really can't control it. But even if you do have an investment plan, you have to know how to invest your money to be able to do what we do here at Lifestyles which is make a lot of money. Let's just put a cap on it. What do? We make a lot more money than the average person makes in their savings plans, with their savings plans. In other words, we take monies, just like everybody else does, that we've saved from some type of income-producing situation, and we invest it.
Real estate wins hands down. And if you want to get started doing what we do, go to lifestylesunlimitedworkshops.com.
Thank you for listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. Join us next time. And until then, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.